Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Yeah, it's Friday. Thanks for tuning in. Stick around tonight. We're going to go from a Russian circus bear to a Halloween book burning to T. Boone Pickens, the guy that was on the electric TV not so long ago talking about wind power. where we are with U.S. bank failures and what the rich Germans are demanding. In other words, a very full menu tonight. Let's start with the Russian circus. There's something about this story, even though it is a human tragedy, there's something, and a bear tragedy, there's something about this story that when I read it, it almost made me feel like an animal liberation person. I felt like I was flinging open the cages at the what's that primate center over here, Kathy? Yerkes Primate Center. Here's the story. There was an ice skating bear who was touring with a Russian circus. And the bear was made to go round and round in a circle on these ice skates. A bear. Well, the bear apparently had enough. So he killed the circus manager and seriously injured a trainer in the Kyrgyzstan capital of Bishkek. The bear turned on the manager, 25-year-old, during a rehearsal. The bear, who had skates on at the time, severely mauled another circus worker who tried to rescue the manager. And then the Kyrgyz police arrived and shot and killed the bear when they arrived. The BBC story says it's not clear what caused the attack. Well, you don't have to be a rocket scientist or a circus owner or even a bear specialist to try to come to a fairly rational conclusion. The bear had had enough. An ice skating bear? A 29-year-old circus employee who tried to rescue the circus manager was himself severely injured and is in critical condition. The director of the circus arena in Bishkek said Russian circus workers dragged the two men away from the bear and closed the exits until the police arrived. Bears on ice are common in Russian circuses. Some are equipped with helmets and sticks and trained to play hockey. Yeah, so tragedy for the people doing this to the bears, but I'd say it's a victory for beardom. Wouldn't you? I mean, what kind of a mind trains a bear, you know, captures a bear out in the woods, the forest, wherever, and puts it on ice skates and gives it a hockey stick? Bears won, circus manager zip in this particular confrontation. I'm sorry. I know that's going to get me extra time in hell, but that's all right. You know, for feeling that way, for feeling like, hey, good for the bear. You know, the circus manager didn't do anything, right? The trainer probably didn't do anything except beat the bear. You know, that's probably the way. How else do you train an animal to do things like ice skate? Reward it with fish? John in Bellflower, California, wants me to know that there is a small North Carolina Baptist church that is going to have an event Halloween night. That's a week from tomorrow. They're going to have a book burning. it's a small North Carolina Baptist church. Well, I guess it has, 14 members? Woo-hoo! It's not secular books that are going to be burning. It's satanic books, like the new King James Version of the Bible, the New Living Translation of the Bible, the Catholic Bible, the North American Standard Bible, the New International Version Bible. That's the books. Those are the books that are going to be burned because, as the pastor says, Those books pervert the Word of God. According to this pastor, the only true version of God's Word is the King James Version, the one we were talking about the other night that was written by Christopher Marlowe and William Shakespeare, right? For, ta-da, King James, because King James apparently just didn't speak Greek and Latin. The pastor will also burn good music records, albums, CDs of pop, oldies, country, southern gospel, contemporary Christian, or anything else he considers ungodly. Pastor's name is Mark with a C, Grizzard or Grizzard. Mark Grizzard, 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 Grizzard. He's at the Amazing Grace Baptist Church. What? He's got a website? Amazing Grace Baptist Church. KJV.com. KJV, what does that say? Oh, King James Version. There you go. You want to send him an email? Amazing Grace Baptist Church, KJV.com. He's gonna burn all, you know, I would expect him to burn, oh, I don't know what, Rosemary's Baby or Tropic of Cancer or Lolita. No. He's going to burn all these other Bibles because they are, what do you call them? They are, what is it here? Because they are perverting the Word of God. All righty then. Isn't this fun? What else we have? T. Boone Pickens. It's at thinkprogress.org. He says we are entitled to Iraqi oil. Entitled. Now, remember T. Boone, greasy son of a bitch, one of these capitalists who, I don't know, he's been an oil man, but T. Boone is... he believes in exploiting anything he gets his hands on and some stuff that he can't. In recent years, he's been involved in efforts to develop alternative energy, you know, wind energy out there in the West Texas flatlands or badlands or hills, whatever. I don't know. You know, what West Texas from east of Louisiana. But remember all those commercials where he's talking about, well, you know, I agree with the people that are saying we got to get a handle on oil. Because oil is running out, and oil is killing us. It's polluting atmosphere. These here, you know, and he was looking for investors and yada yada. Well, then it turns out that he didn't get enough money to. He's got his own billions, but apparently he didn't get enough investors, or I don't know what the intricacies of the story are. But he decided to no more TV commercials and focus back on oil. So now, well, he still has a website, and he's got what's called the Pickens Plan that pledges to reduce our dependence on foreign oil. You know, I'm so tired of that cliche, I could rip my own teeth out. In remarks to Congress yesterday, though, Pickens revealed that he is just as interested as ever in tying our national security to oil interests in the Middle East. He's suggesting that American oil companies are entitled to Iraq's oil because, are you ready? Because we spent blood and treasure with our invasion. Yeah, we invaded Iraq, and that means we are entitled to their oil. He told Congress that some of Iraq's crude belongs to us because of the large number of American troops that lost their lives fighting in the country, and all that money U.S. taxpayers spent in Iraq to kill and murder and destroy and burn and collapse. So because we spend a lot of money turning that into a failed state and being responsible for maybe a million or a million and a half dead Iraqis, not to mention the 4,000 or 5,000 dead Americans, this perverted son of a bitch now says we're entitled to Iraq's oil. Okay, I've got to take a break here so I can let this percolate because there's more on the story. Stay with us. I'm going to try to not tear my teeth out. I'm burning for you.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Coming up after the next break, of course, podcast trivia tonight, where we will give away some free download subscriptions to the program. Podcasts, yada, yada. Now, where were we? Oh, yeah, T-Bone Pickens, T-Bone, told Congress day before yesterday that U.S. energy companies are entitled to Iraq's crude oil because a large number of American troops that were killed there fighting and U.S. taxpayer money spent there. Yeah. And already somebody sent me an email and said, Tom in San Diego says, well, using that philosophy, if I try to rob a bank and get blown away in the process, does my family have the right to all the money in their vault? Yeah, T-Boone Pickens, this is the kind of thinking in capitalist America. I mean, come on. I don't make this stuff up. These guys say it themselves. I'm not like some of these freaks on right-wing radio or television who lie and make stuff up. All I do is bring it to your attention. You know, it's him speaking. He was speaking to the newly formed Congressional Natural Gas Caucus. And according to Think Progress, he was complaining that the Iraqi government has awarded contracts to foreign companies, particularly Chinese firms, to develop Iraq's vast reserves, while American companies have mostly been shut out. So Pickens said, quote, regarding the Iraqis, they are opening them, the oil fields, up to other companies all over the world. We are entitled to it. Heck, we even lost 5,000 of our people. Heck, and 65,000 injured and $1.5 trillion. Well, at least he put the deaths of our people in first place there before the money. Of course, he doesn't mention the million or million and a half Iraqis that we have murdered over the past decade. Of course, to T. Boone, I mean, that's proof enough right there. I mean, if somebody has something you want it, you kill the son of a bitch and take it. He from Texas, boy. What? Come on. Unfortunately, for this piece of human waste and others who feel that we can exploit Iraq's oil because we invaded, killed, and occupied the country, the U.S. is, in fact, a signatory to the Hague Conventions, which specifically bar the confiscation of private property by occupiers. Well, T. Boone, damn. And as Think Progress says, and while Pickens is right that the invasion cost us tremendously in both blood and treasure, it is Iraqis who have suffered the most. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis were killed in the war, millions fled the country, and the nation's infrastructure remains in tatters. So, the person sent this to me, then adds this blank blank believes, like all blank-blank capitalists, that we deserve it because we stole it. Using his warped logic, all bank robbers deserve to keep the loot because they worked so hard to steal it. What is it about that mindset? It's just like the, for some reason I felt not elated, but mildly smug or satisfied when I found out that the circus trainer and the circus manager had either been killed or in critical condition because they'd forced a bear to ride a goddamn ice skates or float around. You know, I mean, that's T. Boone in the first place. This old fart is what? I mean, how old is he? Why isn't he sitting someplace on a beach watching the girls go by? What is this? This greedy son of a bitch has more money than he, every member of his family, all the people that live in his county in Texas, and probably the southern half of San Diego County could spend if all of them lived to be 100 years old. So what is this money-grubbing, capitalist piece of human waste doing now? Now he wants, and since he's an oil man, obviously he feels entitled to Iraq's oil. Because after all, We went in there and lost 5,000 men and 65,000 wounded and spent $1 trillion and murdered 1 million Iraqis. Son of a bitch, by any standard. By any standard you want to apply. I mean, come on, this wild, wild west, goddammit, this West Texas. By any standard, it's ours! Or his. Oh, my God. And you know what? It's people just like T. Boone that run the financial services industry in this country. It's people like T. Boone who run the military-industrial complex in this country. It's people like T. Boone who run the pharmaceutical-industrial complex in this country. They're every place. And I still have listeners that say, well, Mike, we're not quite a fascist country yet. We're not? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Once upon a time in the West, madman lost his damn mind in the West. Loveless, getting up or down, nothing less. Now I must put his behind to the test. Then through the shadows, in the saddle, ready for battle. Bring all your poison, it kind of poison. Behind my back, all everything you did, front and center. Now when you look back, yeah, who that is? A mean brother, bow for your help. Looking damn good, though, if I can say it myself. Told me Loveless is a madman, but I don't fear that. He got mad weapons, too, ain't trying to hear that. Trying to bring down me, the champion, when y'all clowns go. See that it can't be done. Understand me, son. I'm the slickest they is. I'm the quickest they is. Did I say I'm the slickest they is? So if you're walking up the wrong trip.
Oh, no. It's time once again for podcast trivia on the Malloy program. Tonight's winners will receive an all-expense-paid trip around your living room. And a free one-year subscription to Malloy Podcast Downloads, which have a retail value of $59.40. That's also the wholesale value. So, all right, we are ready to play, I believe. Julio is in New York City. Julio, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You ready to do this?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. I will ask you a question and give you four choices for your answer. If you get the right one, you win. Here's the question. What was the vengeful rationale behind the Bush crime family's outing of covert CIA agent Valerie Plame's identity? Was it A, because she discovered Osama bin Laden was on the CIA payroll and was going to go public with that? B, because her husband, Ambassador Joe Wilson, revealed that Saddam Hussein was not obtaining uranium ore from Niger, as Bush stated in his State of the Union speech. C, because she had discovered there were no secret biolabs hidden in palm trees in Iraq. Or D, because her husband planned to disclose Cheney's undisclosed location, the Bat Cave under the Washington Monument.
I guess I would go with C.
See, because she had discovered there were no secret biolabs hidden in palm trees in Iraq?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Julio. The answer is because her husband, Ambassador Joe Wilson, revealed that Saddam Hussein was not obtaining uranium ore from Niger, as Bush stated in his State of the Union speech. All right, thanks, Julio. I appreciate it. You can try again, pal. All right? Who else? Peggy is in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Mike.
Okay, you ready?
I am.
Okay, which member of the Bush crime family said this about Osama bin Laden? We don't know if he's in a cave with the door open or a cave with the door shut. Was it A, Colin Powell, B, Dick Cheney, C, Donald Rumsfeld, or D, George W. Bush?
That had to be D, George W. Bush.
George W. Bush. You're absolutely right! All right. Peggy, you win a one-year subscription to Malloy Show Podcast. Congratulations. Let me put you on hold, and Kathy will get the necessary information. Thanks, Peggy.
Thank you.
Okay, hold on a minute. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Oh, my. All right, where were we? We'll do this again at the bottom of the next hour and the bottom of the third hour tonight, so you can try again if you like. BBC is reporting this. I keep saying BBC because, you know, I check out their website every day. I'm sure it's being reported all over American media also. Although their number's wrong, it says U.S. bank failures hit 100 for the year so far. It's actually 105. The number of U.S. bank failures this year has hit 105 after U.S. federal regulators shut down the Florida-based Partners Bank. More U.S. banks have now failed this year than in any year since 1992. Now, what's significant about 1992? That's right. That was the last year of the first George W. H.W. Bush criminal operation. You remember the SNL meltdown and the way the first George Bush looted the Treasury, looted the economy. And some folks wonder why I call it the Bush crime family. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. These sons of bitches make Al Capone's organization look like a bunch of high, schoolyard bullies. The number is expected to rise. The number of failed banks expected to rise as banks continue to suffer from the bad loans that precipitated the financial crisis. Bad loans? BBC, it was not bad loans that precipitated the crisis. I'm sorry. I know you're a venerable organization that's been around for a long time. But it was not bad loans, BBC, that precipitated the financial crisis. It was back in 1997, '98, when the Glass-Steagall Act was removed from the books here in the United States of America, and the bandits were allowed to run rampant. It wasn't, BBC, bad loans. That was an effect, not a cause. Please, come on, boys. But I digress. The BBC is quick to point out, however, that people who have savings are not in danger in these banks because the FDIC, which is backed by the U.S. government, insures deposits at failed banks for up to $250,000 per account. The FDIC doesn't really insure the deposits. The FDIC insures the banks. Oh, I know, hair splitting, but there is a difference. Oh, well. What else did the BBC say here that is on target but way off target? Well, that's all we need to know. 105 banks. Biggest number of failures since 1992, the last year of the previous Bush crime family, yeah. Now, rich Germans. Rich Germans. There's something really weird going on here. A group of rich Germans has launched a petition calling for the government to make wealthy people like them pay higher taxes. The group says they have more money than they need, and the extra revenue could fund economic and social programs to aid Germany's economic recovery. Germany could raise 100 billion euros, which would be, 150 billion American dollars, if the richest people paid a 5% wealth tax for 2 years. Are you listening? A 5% wealth tax, if the richest people in Germany were taxed 5% for 2 years, it would raise $150 billion dollars, American dollars. The petition has 44 signatories so far and will be presented to newly reelected Chancellor Angela Merkel. The group says the financial crisis is leading to an increase in unemployment, poverty, and social inequality, and they want to stop it. Are you listening to me? This group of rich Germans says, look, the financial crisis here is leading to an increase in unemployment, poverty, and social inequality, and we shouldn't let that happen. Simply donating money to deal with the problems is not enough. They say they want to change the entire approach to this by changing the tax structure. In the petition that they have circulating, these wealthy Germans say, quote, the path out of this crisis must be paved with massive investment in ecology, education, and, oh my God, social justice, end quote. The petition goes on to say that those who had made a fortune through inheritance or hard work or successful entrepreneurship or investment, those people should contribute by paying more in taxes to alleviate the crisis. The man behind the petition, one Dieter Lehmkuhl, told a Berlin newspaper, Tagesspiegel, that there were 2.2 million people in Germany with a fortune of more than 500,000 euros, which would be $750,000. If they all paid this 5% tax for 2 years, Germany could raise $150 billion to fund ecological programs, education, and social projects. My God. What do you make of that? What, they're crazy? They're Germans? They're social democrats or democratic socialists? These are wealthy people. These are not, this is not oi polloi talking here. These are wealthy people. This is not me. It's not you. These are wealthy people saying, look, poverty, social inequality, unemployment, it's not good for the country. It's just not. And we have more money. You know, I immediately think about T. Boone Pickens. And I think, can you imagine Sean Hannity and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, these filthy pig bastards who have never done a lick of labor in their lives, but sit there on Fox News or Premier, a radio network, and put out lies, distortions, and garbage and take home millions upon millions upon millions of dollars while they paint themselves as the friend of working class or middle class Americans. Astonishing. Can you imagine their stepping out and saying, hey, we think the wealthy should pay more, 5% more tax for 2 years. A 5% wealth tax for 2 years. 5%. See, that's what happens when your country is just riddled with socialism, even if it is democratic socialism that allows you to be as wealthy as you can possibly become, either through inheritance or invention or entrepreneurship or hard work, whatever. It's still a socialist country. It's the kind of country that Beck and the rest of these filthy, filthy Americans warn us against. We don't want to be like them. We don't want to be like them. Oh, no. My, my. We'll be back after the break. We have miles to go before we sleep. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen. Relative may bring you down. Harmony spins you around. Information's heavy, yes. Bye-bye-bye material.
Right now, Mike Mullen.
Welcome back. 10 before the hour. A couple emails about this first hour here. Cat Mary in Memphis writes, regarding Bible burning, here's a question no one ever asked. She says, so Amazing Grace Baptist Church is burning all them satanic Bibles on account of the King James Version is the only true word of God? So what were people using as the true word of God before King James had his version written? That's true. I mean, that was only written in what, the 14th century? Or was it the 15th? When was Shakespeare alive? It's just rhetoric. Don't send me an answer. I should know that. So yeah, what were they using for a millennium and a half before that? Good point, Cap Mary. As far as T. Boone, Pickens, Michael and Roswell writes, what Pickens proves with his remarks is that U.S. wars aren't about access to oil, but rather about getting it at the lowest possible price and preventing others from having it. U.S. companies aren't getting the Iraqi contracts because they won't bid higher than other countries. Funny how all these free market principles go right out the window when you've got the U.S. military behind you. Pickens is the perfect example of the corporate entitlement that has fostered and or nurtured our very many wars in the last 50-odd years. Iran would be ignored if it didn't have oil, but as long as it does, it's going to be a boil on the ass of every oil company CEO in the United States. If there's any doubt that our military is being used to secure natural resources and their transportation routes, just watch what happens on the continent of Africa in the next decade or so. Yeah. The part about the T. Boone's story, and this is also true in Africa, is that the Chinese are already there. And you know what the Chinese are doing? I just read something the other day. When the Chinese go into areas that they want to, whose natural resources they want to exploit, the first thing they usually do is build roads and dams and bridges and electric grid. And in other words, they say, look, we're going to improve your life. Well, by the way, our geologists are coming next week, and we want to do some testing because we think there's oil over here, natural gas over here, and we'll split it with you. We're not going to send any troops. Don't worry about it. What we're going to send are engineers and public health people, and some nurses and some people to upgrade your sewer system. Oh, you don't have a sewer system? Okay, we will bring to you something called, watch my lips. I know I'm speaking Mandarin, but watch my lips. Indoor plumbing. You'll like it. You really will. No, it's wonderful, wonderful stuff. We're going to show you that. We're going to show you what, now watch my lips, electricity. Do you know what that is? It's zzz through the air. You'll like that too. Anyway, we're going to bring all this. That's what the, what do? We warn a country that unless they get rid of something in their country that doesn't exist, we are going to kill huge numbers of them. And then we wait while the terror builds and the fear and the anxiety. We wait while the preteen children, those over the age of 5 who listen to their parents talk about, well, are they going to come and kill us? Well, these children go slowly mad, and then what we do is attack the country with depleted uranium weaponry. And we kill and destroy and shatter and blow up and also make sure that the children and the grandchildren and the great-grandchildren of the people we're killing will be born with hideous deformities unto the Gord knows which generation. That's what we do. I'm still trying to figure out where is the moral aspect of our invasion and occupation of Afghanistan. I'm so far behind on this. Nothing for Iraq, nothing for Vietnam, nothing regarding Panama, nothing. I swear to God, before I die, I'd like to know where is the moral imperative on which our leaders have made these decisions to invade and commit mass slaughter. What is the moral imperative? For the longest time, most of my life, it was stopping communism. But I'll be a son of a bitch. I listened to that stopping communism crap where it concerned Vietnam. Vietnam isn't communist, is it? I mean, they have sweatshops just like any other place American corporations have set up business. They're a unified country that just wants to make money. Man. I don't know. I would like to know what the moral imperative is. Maybe John can tell us. Is in Naperville, Illinois. John, what's the moral imperative for invading these countries?
I'm on right now?
Yes.
Oh, well, you know, I wasn't listening that closely. Actually, I called about your comment on the Germans.
Yeah.
We can speak about the Afghanistan if you want. Go ahead.
What do you got to say about the Germans?
So, you know, the whole thing about, I don't know, 42 signatures, was it?
43. Yeah.
That's a lot. I mean,
no.
How many people does Germany have?
Probably
100, 120. 120 people. Oh, they got millions.
Yeah, oh, yeah, tens of millions, yeah.
So 43 people decide that they think they should pay more taxes. And I imagine, just like here in this country, if they want to pay more in tax money.
Well, now, wait a second. You're coming off like a half-cocked right-winger. Nobody said a majority of anybody. We're talking about a handful of super wealthy people. If the majority of the people wanted an increase in taxes, then your phone call might have some basis in rational thought, but it doesn't, and neither does your phone call. Thanks, John. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
It's time to...
Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program on a Friday night. We have a couple of calls here about what we were talking about last hour. Let's take those. Paul is driving in Knoxville.
Hey, Mike, how are you? Listen, you said something that really struck a chord before about the FDIC. It does actually insure the bank.
Yeah, they...
And isn't it funny how we can have socialized insurance for the banks, for the wealthy, and for things that they don't really want to insure, like floods, that they know they won't make profit on? Isn't it funny how we can spend millions and billions of dollars on these people, but we can't spend it on us?
Yeah, yeah. Funny as in the joke's on us.
Yeah, exactly. The joke is, I mean, it's hilarious, but it is a joke on us. And just to answer your other question about the moral imperative,
yeah,
I don't know if you want to consider it moral. I consider it amoral, which is greed. That's the only morality they believe in, if you want to call it morality at all.
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing else but unadulterated greed.
Yeah, it is, and then I wonder why. I mean, I agree with that, but I wonder why somebody like Barack Obama wants to participate in something that is on its face immoral. I don't understand that. Oh well, I'm not bright enough, I guess. Hey, listen, thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Have a nice night, Mike.
All right, sir. You too. Take care. Steve is in Austin, Texas. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Mike. Great show as always.
Thank you.
Regarding T-Bone Pickens, just another oily Texas oil man. You know, another snake oil salesman. No offense to, you know, true elixir salesman.
Right. Well, he almost had me convinced, though. Remember 6 months, a year ago when he was running those commercials about wind power?
Mr. Green.
Yeah. I thought, oh, my God, if we can get T-Bone, we can get anybody.
Yeah, exactly. Well, by his reasoning, then the United States really should consider invading Texas taking into custody the murderer, Rick Perry, the governor, cheerleader, both, sounds strange, another cheerleader from Texas.
Yeah.
Take him over, and hopefully with a lot less loss of life and refugee problems, because I really don't want to go into Oklahoma. And Louisiana can't handle refugees.
Right.
And New Mexico is just a little too mountainous.
I hear you.
So the let the call go out. The partisans in the hills are ready. You know, please invade us like they did in the Balkans. But true partisans like World War II partisans who are really welcoming. Please help us out. Please, folks. Take it easy on Texas. There are, you know, reasonable people here.
Yeah. Oh, I know. I know. I mean, Texas produced Molly Ivins and Jim Hightower, two that always stand out to me. All right. Well, listen, Steve, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Take care. You have a nice weekend. Remember we talked last night about Dick Cheney's mad ramblings the other night at some circle jerk affair where right-wingers give each other these asinine awards. Oh, God. That was when he said that Barack Obama's dithering. You know, I'm not going to get deep into Cheney's blood and gore routine, but, you know, this is one sick individual. I mean, by any definition, madness. But anyway, Joe Biden, is in the Czech Republic. I believe he's in the Czech Republic. And he had a blunt response today to the former Vice President Dick Cheney said, according to the New York Times. Biden said, who cares? Who cares what he said? Biden rejected this review of the war from Cheney as being irrelevant. You know, and he's right. I don't know why I or anybody else talks about what this ghoulish vampire bastard says. Cheney had 8 years this go around. He had lots of years in government. But he had 8 years this go around. What did that son of a bitch hand off to Barack Obama that was anywhere near what had been handed off to him? Now, without getting too deep into Clinton, who I didn't like, Cheney and his cabal took over, he was handed a budget surplus for the second year in a row and, a lowering national debt and budget surpluses extended out for the next 10, 12 years. As far as the eye could see, $1.7 trillion, I think, was the number that the Clintonistas said. Here it is, $1.7 trillion, if you just continue to do what we're doing now. Of course, you know, the lump in that passing of gas was the fact that the Clinton had presided over NAFTA. So, I understand. Clinton also handed off, not a single American soldier had died in combat under him. I know. There was 50,000 or half a million Iraqi children died because of the sanctions. I understand. I'm just saying, okay? So what happened? What happened to the condition of the U.S. when it was handed to Cheney and his puppet George W. Bush? They immediately just immersed it in the urinal. Everything about the United States, these son of a bitches took into a public urinal and squished it around. That's all they did. And Cheney has the audacity to say anything about anything. You know, he's absolute failure. Absolute failure. God. You know, I wonder sometimes, I guess because I despise these people so badly, and it almost warps my ability to see some of the bad stuff that is continuing under Barack Obama. I don't think the Obama administration has initiated any more assaults and firestorms on the Constitution, but he's allowing the ones initiated by the Bush crime family to continue. So is Obama less of a destroyer of constitutional freedom because he allows it to continue, or constitutional law, I should say, or is he more because he allows it to continue? We're speaking relative terms here. Bush and Cheney destroyed what they destroyed, and Barack Obama seems to be upholding some of the destruction as legitimate. Our military affairs correspondent sent this the other night, Sharon, and then a couple other people sent it in too. Sharon writes, Senator Dan Inouye of Hawaii is a Medal of Honor recipient. He left an arm in Italy during World War II. Members of his family were held in internment camps here in the United States while he was serving in Europe. I don't know what's up with this. All right, what she's talking about is an amendment, the Franken Amendment, that would have prevented the government, or will prevent the government, from working with contractors who deny victims of assault or sexual assault the right to bring their case to court. That amendment is being watered down or stripped entirely from a larger defense appropriations bill. And according to sources on the Hill, and sources who have told the Huffington Post, Senator Dan Inouye, a longtime Democrat from Hawaii, is considering removing that provision, which was offered by Senator Franken and passed by the Senate several weeks ago. Dan Inouye's office, sources say, has been lobbied by defense contractors, adamant that the language of the Franken Amendment would leave them overly exposed to lawsuits and at constant risk of having contracts dry up. More on this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
The voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Ooh, that just sounds so spooky. 21 past the hour. All right, Senator Dan Inouye, longtime Democrat from Hawaii, Congressional Medal of Honor recipient, World War II veteran, is apparently toying with the idea of stripping from the Defense Appropriations Bill an amendment put in there by Senator Al Franken and passed by the Senate several weeks ago, that simply says if somebody commits crimes and they have a federal contract, federal government contract, and they commit rape or other sorts of physical assault, there is no negotiating or arbitration with the corporation to settle this. People who are brutally raped should have the full force of U.S. law behind them. I don't care if they're on the moon. I mean, they're an American corporation, and this particular woman that we all know about because she's gone public with this. This particular woman is, you know, was raped multiple times by employees of KBR, where she, with whom she was an employee, and was forced prior to going to Iraq to sign a contract that said any sort of incident that arose would be handled by arbitration within the company. And it's out in the open now. So Franken, of course, has tried to bring an end to the practice. Why are you stumbling around here? I don't know. Everybody knows the story anyway. Okay, I'm sorry. Well, you know, it's crazy when you're talking to yourself. Well, it's crazier when you answer. Okay, all right. So Dan Inouye, the senator from Hawaii, has decided no. Apparently, he has been lobbied by defense contractors who insist that the language of the Franken Amendment, and I read it to you on the air the other night, would lead them overly exposed to lawsuits and at constant risk of having contracts dry up. You know, which is garbage talk. No, it wouldn't. You just don't tell them to sign anything. That's all. And you make it clear to the U.S. authorities in whatever country you're operating in that we are currently occupying or have invaded, or where you've decided to go over and steal more corporate money, or I'm sorry, more taxpayer money, you corporate thugs, Kellogg Brown and Root, you just don't force your employee to sign anything like that. And you notify the American authorities when you get there, if anyone commits rape, arrest them. How hard is that? But according to Inouye's office, defense contractors are saying, oh, well, this will leave us exposed to lawsuits and put us at constant risk of having our contracts dry up. What does that mean? The Franken Amendment says if you allow rapists to operate within your country, your company, you won't get contracts. So what are you saying, corporate America, defense contractors? Are you saying that you can only hire rapists? Your contracts will dry up. This is ex post facto anyway. The amendment says any company that has forced or requests employees to sign that won't get a contract. So it's not like you hired all these rapists and sent them over to Iraq and then they commit rape, incipient rapists, then they commit rape and now you're on the hook. No, you dumb bastards, you corporate freaks. It's very simple. If somebody commits rape, one of your employees rapes another one, what you're supposed to do when one employee complains is notify the authorities. What is so hard about that? You bastards. A source says that Inouye's office has been stormed by the defense contractors. This source goes on to say, according to... Christ, I get so tired of this. Huffington Post. The source says, in a way, either we'll get the amendment taken out altogether or water it down significantly. If they water it down, they will take out the Title VII claims. This means that in discrimination cases, they will still force you into a secret forced arbitration on Kellogg, Brown & Root's or other contractors' own terms, with your chances of prevailing practically zero. The House seems to be very supportive of the original Franken Amendment and all in line, but their hands are tied since it originated in the Senate. And since Inouye runs the show on this bill, he's the chairman of this committee, he can easily take it out to get Republicans and the defense contractors off his back. A Democratic aide on the Hill, also with knowledge of the situation, confirmed the account, as did a source who works on defense contracting matters outside of contract, outside of Congress. The latter source said, quote, the contractors are putting on a full court press on this amendment. They are all doing it, end quote. And then Huffington Post goes on to say the decision on what to do with this amendment, the Franken Amendment, is being made in conference committee with the House, which... the House and the Senate, which severely limits the number of lawmakers who can weigh in on the matter. Inouye, by the way, is the second longest serving member of the United States Senate, chairman of the Committee on Appropriations, and he's received $300,000 in donations from the defense and aerospace industries over the course of his career. Oh, my. Is it already 1:30 another hour? It certainly is. All right, it's time to play. Try English.
Okay.
It's time to play podcast trivia once again, where you can win a free one-year subscription to Malloy Program Downloads. Let's try Bill, who is in Eunice, Louisiana. Is that right, Bill?
That's right.
Okay. Are you ready to play?
Let's do it.
Okay. In 2006, who was named Villain of the Year in an AP AOL news poll? Was it A, George Bush, B, Osama bin Laden, C, Dick Cheney, or D, Saddam Hussein? In 2006, who was named Villain of the Year in an AP AOL news poll?
Oh, that's tough. Let's go with Saddam Hussein.
I'm sorry. Yeah, it was George W. Bush.
I never would have thought it.
All right, Bill. We'll try again. Thanks, man. I appreciate you trying. Villain of the Year. Okay, moving right along. Michael is in Ashland, Kentucky. Hey, Michael.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm okay. All right, here we go. Ready to play?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Which of the following was not a White House press secretary during the Bush years? Was it Dana Too Much Cappuccino Perino, Ari the Pencil Neck Geek Fleischer, Scott Simple Scotty McClellan, or Irving Scooter Libby? Which one of those was not a White House press secretary during the Bush years?
Irving Libby.
Yeah, that's right. All right, yeah. Way to go, Michael!
Just like what you mentioned, I don't call him Scooter either, because that's what you name that's the nickname you give a child.
That's right, or it's something your child rides around on. You're absolutely right. All right, hold on, Michael. Kathy's going to come on the air or come on the phone and get the pertinent information. Way to go, Michael! All right, now we'll be doing this again in an hour to give away one more. I'm still kind of hung up on the Senator Dan Inouye story. That was, I don't have heroes because, you know, I believe a hero ain't nothing but a sandwich. But there are people I respect for various and sundry reasons. I mean, or let me rephrase it. There are people whose actions I respect. And, in a way, it was one of those, because under extreme situations, I mean, his family was being held in one of those West Coast internment camps, because in a way was of Japanese descent. His family was being held while he was off fighting for freedom. This is like African Americans in this country who Hosea Williams, a friend of mine who is now dead. But Hosea, who was a great civil rights activist here in Atlanta and all over the country, when Dr. King would go into areas where he was not wanted, Hosea would be the bad cop. Andy Young would be the good cop. Andy Young would go in and try to negotiate a peaceful solution. And when the white power structure more or less told him to go F himself, then Hosea Williams would come in and explained to them what was going to happen in that community. Of course, he would immediately get arrested. But anyway, Hosea Williams was a World War II veteran. He fought in, I'm not sure what battles he fought in. I seem to remember he fought in the liberation of Italy. Maybe he fought in the Battle of the Bulge later. I don't remember. But he was a combat veteran who had been wounded. And when he came back to the United States, you know, people went into the military then, I guess, what they called for the duration. When he came back on furlough and disembarked at Savannah, Georgia, or Fort, there's an Army Air Force Base down there. Well, Georgia's chock-a-block with military bases. But he disembarked at Savannah. And to get back to his home in Atlanta, they would not allow him to get on public transportation unless he would sit in the back of the bus. You know the story. Sit in the back of the bus, or sit in a special train car reserved for Negroes. And Hosea Williams was just like, yeah, as you can well imagine, you know, what am I doing? Why am I fighting for American freedom when it's not mine? Dan Inouye impressed me the same way. I always thought, you know, Here was a guy, a real American hero, not one of my heroes, but a real American hero who was willing to go fight against fascism while his own country back home was practicing fascism against his family. So, and to rise above that, to show that you are so much more capable of being a decent human being than your own government while you were off fighting a war was, to me, always impressive. And now this, where Dan, in a way, is, of course, he's very old now. Maybe his mind is going, and I say that without disrespect. I say it with, in a way, must be in his 80s, is he not? He's now the second longest-serving member of the United States Senate. The Franken's Amendment passed the Senate by a vote of 68 to 30. Remember, we read off the names of the 30 Republicans who want rape to continue to be something that a company deals with. And, of course, when you go into company arbitration on these deals, you don't have an Ice Cube's chance in hell. And we named the 30 Republicans who said, yeah, if you're female and you go into go to work for one of these corporations that is stealing money in a war zone, well, you know, what can we tell you? Wear a metal chastity belt or just expect to have lots and lots of sex, whether you want it or not, you little split tails. You know how Republicans are, right? So here's Dan Inouye, a Democrat. Now, the Republicans at least showed their true colors when they voted against the amendment. Dan Inouye, who voted for the amendment, unless he was absent that day, the vote was 68 to 30, so there were two senators missing. But one assumes Dan Inouye voted for the amendment, and now the pressure is building on him to strip it out, and he's telling, or word is leaking out, that he's going to. Well, I'll tell you what, Senator Inouye, when you do that, you will have made an enemy, and that will be me, and that doesn't mean squat to Senator Inouye. He doesn't know me from a fart on the wind. But I will know that I'm Dan Inouye's an enemy if he submits to this kind of pressure from the defense industry. See how corporate America works? See how these filthy bastards work? And some of these miserable right-wingers who listen to this program, you guys still don't get it, do you? Or you gals, you just don't get it, do you? You don't understand what's going on. You don't have a clue how close you are to living in a truly fascist state. You don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. So now, that's what Inouye has done. You hear what McCain is doing? Introducing a bill to block net neutrality? Have you been following this story? John McCain introduced a bill in the Senate yesterday that would effectively allow internet service providers to slow down or block internet content or applications of their choosing. Huh? According to Raw Story, the move came the same day that the federal government decided to move forward on an official net neutrality policy that would prevent ISPs from making those types of decisions. But here comes John McCain. Ah, a maverick. No, you're not. You're a goddamn corporate whore, just like the rest of you. No offense to sex workers, like the rest of you punks. Here comes McCain. It's called, his bill is entitled, here we go again, the Internet Freedom Act. Don't you love that? The Internet Freedom Act. It would block the FCC from making net neutrality the law of the land. McCain said in a written statement that the rule preventing ISPs from slowing down certain types of content would create, in McCain's word, onerous federal regulation, end quote, onerous. He also said that the proposed net neutrality is, his words, government takeover of the Internet.
Government takeover. They already took over General Motors. He took over, trying to take over healthcare. Now I want to take over the Internet. So my bill, my Internet Freedom Act.
Now, you understand Newspeak. You understand Orwell. You understand anything that says it is called the Internet Freedom Act means just the opposite. Just like Fox News Channel means just the opposite on the modifier. Exactly the opposite. So the Internet Freedom Act is nothing of the sort. It unless you want to stretch it out to the point where you you're willing to concede that it gives freedom, you see, to the Internet service providers to restrict anything they want. Now, what do you call that? Let me see. Censorship. Only censorship in the most egregious kind, because there is more to it than just that. They will allow on their, the ISP companies will allow then content that will, what, pay enough to get on board the train? John McCain, Dan Inouye. Same sons, different mothers. You know what I'm talking about? We can win a million pounds. Don't need temptation. When your enemy comes to fear, just to just give me consolation.
Watches C-SPAN so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
And 10 before the hour. So networkworld.com, I guess. As networkworld.com article notes, John McCain was on the opposite side of the net neutrality debate when from Obama during last year's presidential campaign. And according to Network World, during his White House campaign, President Obama came out strongly in favor of net neutrality, which is backed by companies like Google and Amazon and Yahoo, eBay, and consumer advocacy groups, but opposed by telecommunications companies, wireless companies, and cable companies. Now, anything that corporate America, that branch of corporate America, I realize there are corporations set up based on the Internet, and some of them are just evil as hell, but also some of them are as unevil as you can possibly be, because they provided a means of communication and transmission, and that's the important part, a means of transmission, global transmission that is unstoppable unless the bad corporations, and you know who they are, start to screw around with it with their inside help like John McCain. This week, MediaMatters.org criticized conservative news host, I love the way they put that, why don't you just say goddamn psychopath, Glenn Beck, for what it said was Beck's allegation that net neutrality is a Marxist plot. Oh, goddamn. This boy is so sick. Net neutrality is a Marxist plot, and that the point of net neutrality is to control content. You see how Beck lives in ass backwards world? Net neutrality. See, if Glenn understood what the word neutrality meant. Oh, never mind. Jesus, God. It is just, I don't know. In his announcement today, or yesterday, McCain appeared to agree with the notion that net neutrality represents regulation and control rather than a lack of legislation and control. Jesus, God. McCain said, quote, that his bill would, quote, keep the Internet free from government control and regulation. Oh, my God. The opposite of net neutrality is what McCain wants, which is control. It's all about control. It's all about charging different rates to users by these ISP companies. Oh, my God, I get so sick of this. And, of course, the average person, once again, who uses the Internet doesn't have a clue about, you know, what any of this is. My God. All right, we're coming up on a break here, top of the hour break. I saw this today, and I just can't seem to get my mind around this. Fear of long-term effects is the main reason for people not getting the H1N1 vaccine. Fear of long-term effects. And this is a study that has results from a new media study among 300 Americans, which is not a very large sample group, but 300 Americans revealed that parents with children under the age of 18 are more likely to have them vaccinated against H1N1 after viewing a message from the Assistant Surgeon General. The study was conducted by so-and-so to obtain viewers' viewers' perceptions of a news clip featuring a message from the Assistant Attorney General, Ann Schuchat, in which she discussed the seasonal flu vaccine and the H1N1 vaccine. To get detailed results, this, by the way, you can go to MediaCurves.com. Among the parents who reported that they did not approve of their children receiving H1N1 vaccine prior to viewing the message, 21% indicated that they approved after viewing the message from the Assistant Surgeon General. The majority of respondents, 70%, reported they are confident the H1N1 vaccine is successful in preventing the flu. A slightly higher percentage, 77%, are confident that the seasonal flu vaccine is successful in its preventive measures. So what, I understand there's all kinds of arguments. Oh, my God. I mean, I've had some really good people send me some really interesting stuff about the dangers of vaccines. I understand the murderous, filthy, stinking, rotten pharmaceutical industrial complex. I understand. I really do. But I just can't accept this. This overarching suspicion that vaccines are developed in such a haphazard, slapdash, don't give a damn way that people who take them are going to have horrible things happen. I'm sorry, folks. I just cannot. And there really isn't any point to try to convince me because I can't do it. I and members of my immediate family, my nuclear family, my extended family have probably had, oh, I don't know, a thousand different vaccinations at different times over the course of all of our lives. And I realize I'm doing a very stupid thing right now by saying, well, it never happened to my, you know, it's cold here in Atlanta, so there must not be global warming. I understand the stupidity about what I'm going to say. But, you know, out of 1,000-plus vaccinations, nobody has ever gotten sick or had long-term problems or had to deal with some kind of a developmental disorder because of taking a shot. God only knows how much mercury preservative got shot into my arms when I was a kid, I guess. God knows. I've got children in their 40s. God knows how much was injected into them, and they seem to be doing just fine 35 years after the fact. I don't, 38 years after the fact. I don't get this. I really don't. As soon as H1N1 is available here, I'm not going to get it because I'm not in the target group. Kathy's going to get it, and Molly's going to get it. So I there's no doubt about that. I mean, we've discussed this left, right, sideways, and up and down. To have my daughter injected with a killed virus in order to give her immunity. Yeah. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. It's a rainy night here in Georgia. How about where you live, huh? T. Boone Pickens. One more here. This is from Duke, who writes, actually, Mike, I'm ashamed to say that Pickens is not a Texan. He was born in Holdenville, Oklahoma. I guess that's where Duke is from. Well, Oklahoma. All right, there you go. Texas oil man, though, doesn't necessarily mean he was. George Bush was a Texas oil man. He wasn't born there, was he? But anyway, thanks. Appreciate it, Duke. Sarah in North Carolina writes, regarding what I said about the Chinese, when they go into a place to exploit the natural resources of that place, they usually don't come in with, they don't come in with guns and bombs and napalm and white phosphorus and murder and death. They come in with, you know, ideas about improving the infrastructure of the country they're about to do business with. Sarah writes, Mike, when I was in Rwanda in the mid-80s, leading a tour to visit the mountain gorillas with biologist Paul Ehrlich and Obama's now top science advisor John Holdren. Wow, Sarah. I was surprised to see Chinese building and improving the country's eroded red clay roads by hand. China's efforts to build goodwill in Africa seems to have been going on for a long time, even back in the mid-80s. As to those rich Germans who want their taxes raised, won't well-off Americans ever understand that crime, sickness, and a whole lot of unpleasantness comes along with poverty and can affect their own sweet lives? Having a country of healthy and fairly contented people is always a happier and safer place to live. As you probably recall, crime rates fell under President Clinton. Sarah in Brevard. You were on a tour with some pretty important people there, Miss Sarah. And Michael in Roswell writes in again about Inouye has always protected the defense industry, talking about Daniel Inouye, the senator from Hawaii, wants to strip out this Franken Amendment from the Defense Appropriation Bill. Michael writes, he's been on the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Defense for more than three decades and has always been one of the most hawkish Democrats around. The simple truth is that the military cannot fight foreign wars today without having private contractors do the things that draftees formerly did. So private contractors are now an integral part of the defense establishment and in a way is going to protect them. That only a very few private corporations are certified by the Department of Defense to perform this work, and therefore wars can't be fought without them, is a more complicated question that goes back to Cheney's manipulations of the, I don't know what the log cap program is, in 1991. But what the defense contractors are telling Inouye is that they can't be held responsible for their own hiring decisions. And in a way, siding with that view because he knows that these crimes will continue to occur. And barring the contractors who do not comply with the proposed law will mean that foreign wars can't be fought for any notable length of time. If the contractors comply with the proposed law, it will inevitably cost them profits and put their reputations on public view in the courts. So they're using the threat of not bidding on defense support contracts to convince Inouye to protect them. It all comes back to the ability of the United States military to fight foreign wars it shouldn't be fighting in the first place. Yeah, from Michael in Roswell. Well, it seems like every day another hero in government, or someone who one thought had performed heroic actions, has feet of clay. I believe that's the expression, right? Feet of clay. What else we got? This is bad news. I think it's in tomorrow's New York Times. The NATO defense ministers have endorsed a wider Afghan war. All right? The dispatch is from Bratislava, Slovakia. It says NATO defense ministers gave their broad endorsement Friday to the counterinsurgency strategy for Afghanistan laid out by General Stanley McChrystal. Increasing pressure on the Obama administration and on their own governments to commit more military and civilian resources to that mission. You don't suppose that's the reason McChrystal's demands, and they are demands, were leaked to begin with back in September, do you? And you think, McChrystal's review calls for implementing a full-scale counterinsurgency strategy that focuses on protecting population centers and accelerating the training of Afghan army and police units, and so on, and so on, and so on. Robert Gates, Obama's defense secretary, whose views carry weight in Obama's War Council, according to the New York Times, declined to be drawn out on his assessment. Gates said, for this meeting, I'm here mainly in listening mode, although he noted that, quote, many allies spoke positively about General McChrystal's assessment, end quote. Really? Well, the pressure on Obama now is almost to the point where if he refuses to increase the death and destruction, long-term, short-term, intermediate-term, in that sad medieval country, then all the more ammunition, no pun intended, for the right-wing screamers and degenerates in talk radio and television to say, see, he's even defying NATO. So you can count on it. You know it's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. You know that Barack Obama is going to announce a commitment that will not be quite what McChrystal wanted, which will allow McChrystal then his out when it becomes apparent 3 years from now and McChrystal is goes into retirement and he has failed in subduing Afghanistan. And in fact, if there hasn't been a nuclear war initiated because of this madness, Pakistan will be once again under the firm control of a military dictatorship, which, surprise, surprise, we will support and back, if not engineer, into their position of power. So this gives McChrystal, though, a chance. He can say, well, 3 years ago when I requested 40,000 troops, actually, press reports were correct. I was requesting anywhere from 10 to 80,000. And what I got was 17,000. And that's the reason now that everything is chaotic here. And the car bombs go off every day. And so far, there are 4,000 dead Americans in the Afghan adventure. But I'm retiring because, you see, I tried to save Barack Obama's ass, and he wouldn't let me, so I'm out of here. Except, of course, that's not what McChrystal would say at all. What McChrystal would say is, I'm out of here. I'm going back to the United States, where I'm going to participate in a coup against Barack Obama. Huh? No? What do you have a problem with there? Oh, he wouldn't announce it. Oh, okay. So when do you think? I don't know what the what did Obama say. By the middle of November or the end of October, he would make his announcement about his plans regarding Afghanistan. Why, you know, here's something interesting. Why doesn't Barack Obama say, look, folks, somehow the War Powers Act that goes all the way back to whom? To, I don't know when that act was made part of the law, but, you know, Barack Obama's a constitutional scholar, wasn't he? Why doesn't he come out next week and get one of those primetime news conferences? He addresses the American people, and he said, I'm going to go back to the Constitution. The Constitution clearly states that I don't have the power to declare war. Only the Congress can do that. So here's what I'm going to do with Afghanistan. If the Congress declares war, let's do it.
Off this mortal coil and trade your blood for oil.
50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Coming up right after this next break, we'll be doing podcast trivia, right? Thrifty. Is that right? Is in Portland, Oregon. Thrifty?
Hello? Yeah, that's right.
Oh, hey, Thrifty.
Hey, how are you doing tonight, Mike?
Fair to partly cloudy. How about you?
You know, I'm doing pretty all right. It's always raining in these parts.
I've never talked to anybody named Thrifty.
You know, if anything, it's a way of life. You know, you got to be frugal in these days or any days.
Well, that's true. So what you got on your mind?
Well, I'm glad you're out doing your thing tonight, first of all. And I don't know, what I was thinking about was a friend of mine who I'd met.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't alive then, but there was a time in this country, apparently, when...
Wait. This person you met, but you weren't alive when you met him or her?
A friend of mine who I'd met working in this butcher shop in Eugene, Oregon. I was cutting to the chase.
Yeah, okay. Somebody you met before you were born who worked in a butcher shop.
Yeah,
this is great.
Right now.
Hey, Thrifty, what are you smoking?
Right. I hear you keep it lit all the time. Anyway.
Yeah, well, what is it? I mean, this is pretty good. We've been to a butcher shop and people you met before you were born, and you've only been talking for a minute, 29 seconds. I'm just sitting here going, damn, I want some of that.
Well, in any case,
All right, go ahead.
The thing I have to say is that I wasn't alive at such a time.
Yeah, okay.
I was born in 1980, but... You know, there was a time in this country when the upward mobility that the American dream had to offer actually ensured that an individual working for Ford Motors could raise three children and send them off to school.
I grew up in that time. I see what you're saying now, Thrifty. I'm sorry, you got a couple of phrases inverted there or something, but I get it now. Yeah, I grew up in that time. I mean, when I was a kid growing up, it was almost impossible. My mother worked as a waitress because my old man wouldn't. But I mean, for most families that where the father worked in a factory job, it took care of everything.
Yeah, and by the time his kids got to go to school, he could pay for it.
Yes,
and then still think about retiring. Well,
that's right.
You know, by the time the kids were coming up, of the age of his offspring when they were maybe in college.
Right.
This same upward mobility and the infrastructure that it had established.
It was gone.
Well, it wasn't quite gone. It still enabled people like Bill Gates to make $50 billion.
Right.
That, which they hate to see. They don't want to see a nobody make $50 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're destroying the middle class, because they don't want to see people make the money that they would love to claim as their own, or even worse, you know, say someone even who comes from nothing is able to climb up the ladder through this upward mobility that was supposedly the American dream, and it's an education. And not only that, they're a brilliant individual. They have an ability with words or whatever, and they can speak for the masses. I don't care if you're a Gandhi or a whatever have you.
Mm-hmm.
Those kind of people are dangerous for this establishment.
That's true. That's very true.
And if anything, you know, of course they want to make us slaves, but... They definitely don't want to see us have a voice, and they don't want to see have us money in our pockets.
That's true. Well, listen, I'll tell you what, Thrifty, that is a very good overview of this madness. And the end result of this, of course, is what you talk about, the end of the middle class. Thrifty, thanks for checking in, man. Don't be a stranger. I like the way you talk. Come back. Kelly is in Santa Cruz. Hey, Kelly.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. Now, you know, we have the thing we have up in Canada. You know, we talk about how bad the health, you know, we're debating right now in the Senate about United States health care. Right now in Canada, the province of New Brunswick started their H1N1 virus shots available today.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And then next week, the rest of Canada is getting it available.
Mm-hmm.
I just qualify this statement because this is a first shot with the Advent or booster.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ones that they're currently using. Now, within a week or two, the ones without the booster will be approved by the Health of Canada. But mm-hmm. that's where they're at right now.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have enough vaccine for everyone up there. Whereas we're looking at probably the middle of November from the last I heard.
Yeah, middle or the end of November. I'm starting to see. I think I'm starting to see just the beginning of panic with a lot of families where they have small children, or the woman is pregnant, and those are the two. I'm starting to sound like Thrifty. The two population groups that are most affected by this virus. I don't know, man. All right, podcast trivia. When we come back, call in now. Let me give you one of these, all right? It's time once again, ladies and gentlemen, for Mike Malloy Program Podcast Trivia. Come up with the right answer. You win a one-year subscription to Malloy Podcast Downloads. Commercial free. Hey, hey. All right. Let's play. Kathy is in Gold Beach, Oregon. Is that on the beach? Is that actually a beach town?
Yes, it is. It's right on the ocean.
Oh, my God. I bet it's just beautiful.
Oh, it is.
Right.
You should bring Kathy and the baby and come and visit.
Yeah.
You would love it. Rogue River comes out there, and it's beautiful.
You know, my son and his wife were just there. They were in Portland. She had business there. They were in Portland. They went out. I don't know if they went to Gold Beach, but they went out to the coast of Oregon. And
Southern coast.
Huh? You're the southern coast, but he said it was just stunning, just absolutely beautiful. Well, anyway, you ready to play this?
Oh yes, I want to win so bad.
I want you to. All right.
Okay.
Here we go.
All right.
Before joining the Bush crime family, Condoleezza Rice held what position? Was it A, CEO of ExxonMobil, B, concert pianist with the New York Symphony, C, political science professor and provost at Stanford University, or D, personal shoe shopper for Imelda Marcos?
Oh, I love to guess D, but that's not it. Okay, what was...
All right, here we go. A, CEO of ExxonMobil, B, concert pianist with the New York Symphony, C, political science professor and provost at Stanford University in California, or D, personal shoe shopper for Imelda Marcos?
I think it's C. I hope
C?
Right.
You're right!
Oh!
All right. Way to go, Kathy. Yeah,
Thank you so much, Mike. I love the show.
Well, I'm glad. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Hold on now, and Kathy will get the pertinent information. All right. We will be doing this again next Friday, and the Friday after that, and the Friday after that. We've gotten so many gift subscriptions to give away on the air. It's really interesting to me how many people have contributed the podcast subscriptions, and I'm really grateful. Thank you all very, very much. If you want to buy a subscription, which will cost you 25 cents a program, or $59 a year is what that works down too. Go to MikeMalloy.com. We could certainly use about another another 1,000 subscribers, frankly. We want to keep the program on the air, folks. From our military affairs correspondent, who is up late this evening, apparently, she writes in regarding net neutrality, you know, and McCain trying to get this bill in that would block net neutrality. Sharon points out the obvious that I missed completely. John McCain does not even use the Internet. He couldn't turn on a PC if his life depended on it. Yeah, remember back during the campaign when he is just computer illiterate? I mean, just astonishingly so. And this guy, he probably doesn't understand the language in his own bill. I'm sure he doesn't. He's just doing this because the people who give him money said, get on the floor of the Senate, John, and introduce this. And she puts a P.S. regarding the NATO defense ministers endorsing, more or less, General Stanley McChrystal's plan for Afghanistan. Sharon wants to know, will NATO be sending more troops? And, of course, Sharon, being our military affairs correspondent, already knows the answer to that, which will be no, hell no. Oh, okay, yeah, the Brits will send another 300 until they get sick of it. The Italians, I don't know, aren't the Italians pulling out all together? The Spanish, the Dutch, yeah, what, six? I mean, it's madness, and I just hope, but that's stupid. It just occurred to me while I'm saying it. Obama is not going to say what he needs to say. And it's what I said a moment ago before the last break. What's wrong with that? That way Obama is completely, totally off the hook. And what are these right wingers going to do? Oh, the son of a bitch used the Constitution. Did he? See? All he has to do. And this is my wonderful, brilliant idea. All mine. It's one of those things I thought about yesterday when I was putting out grass seed. Obama is they've got him in a pincher movement here. Cheney, the right wing garbage heads on talk radio and television, the hard nosed blue dog Democrats who are afraid of their own goddamn shadows. Obama is just like right in the pincher, isn't he? And you can tell how serious it is when his own Secretary of Defense, who's a holdover from the Bush crime family, won't say one way or the other, Gates. So the obvious out here, why is this obvious to me? And not the people, not Obama or his advisors. The obvious out is to declare that this president is tired of unconstitutional wars being committed or entered into by the United States, that every war since the declaration of war on December 10th, 1941, has been extra-constitutional. Every single one of them. You know, NATO, screw NATO. Aren't the right-wingers always talking about, well, we're losing our sovereignty. Oh, my God, NATO troops are going to be walking the streets of Chicago. Okay, so who gives a goddamn what NATO says? Why not? Why not let Barack Obama declare his heroism and his adherence to constitutional law by going on the TV one night next week and saying, I've reached my decision. And my decision is to return to the Congress of the United States the war-making powers that are granted to it by the Constitution. They didn't grant him, the president, those powers. I mean, goddamn, come on! And what would people say, since we're all concerned about what people say? What would the right-wing garbage mouth say on radio and television? What would they say? Oh, well, he was a coward. He decided to let the Senate decide. He decided to turn it back over to Congress. And then what's our response? Well, you dumb bastards. That's what the Constitution. How many of those teabaggers, how many of those, I realize they're booger eating, empty headed freaks, but how many of those booger eaters stood out there all summer? Oh, the Constitution! We want the Constitution back! God damn it, I want the Constitution! Okay, here's your Constitution. Here it is. Why doesn't Obama do this without all the profanity that I'm dumping in here? I'm sorry, but you know me. Why doesn't Obama do it? Why doesn't he get on the air? Somebody give me an answer. Somebody tell me why that wouldn't work. The power to conduct or wage a war rests with the legislative branch, not the executive. They also have the power to fund it or defund it. And if they decide a declaration of war is necessary or logical, then the President of the United States becomes the Commander-in-Chief. There's no Commander-in-Chief when there's no declaration of war. How in the hell did that happen? Bush in his little codpiece in his flight suit. You know, I don't care what kind of get-up or makeup or Halloween costume these sick bastards want to parade around in. When did it become accepted that Congress no longer has that authority? That the Senate no longer can make a declaration of war, that now it's got to come through a presidential war council, or all the House and the Senate has to do is to sign off on an appropriations bill? When did that happen? Well, we all know when it happened, but why doesn't Obama take it back? Yeah, okay, sure. Andrew is in Nashville. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Moving right along.
Mike, in 2004, my life entirely changed.
What happened?
I got my Exxon subscription. I was able not only to turn the AM dial out forever,
yeah,
but also get rid of corporate news.
Right.
So I used to be addicted to all of it.
Yeah.
And even though I can win any argument with any right-winger I encounter,
yeah,
because I now have the facts on my side, how do we deal with them? I mean, we can just ignore them. We can say you're full of whatever and get out of my life, get away from me. But how do we, I mean, even though 20% of them are still Republican, the trucking industry is infested with them, specifically in my industry.
Mm-hmm.
How do I deal with them without wanting to punch them? You know, the anger just feels how stupid these people are.
I don't know. I deal with that by keeping myself out of contact with people. You know, I'm not a hermit, but, you know, I limit my contact with the rest of the human race. I mean, Jesus Christ, I live in Georgia. I almost have to do it as a survival mechanism. And I'm armed, and I'm allowed to, the county sanctions my being armed. So it's rough. Andrew, I gotta leave it there. Thanks, pal. Appreciate you calling. To play.
Starched white shed, you will find the bigger piggies stirring up the dirt. Always have clean sheds to play around
back. It is about 9:30 before the hour, thanks to our crew. Tonight is all the nights that we have this program on the air. Consists of Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bruce Enberg, Kay Petrini, Bob Alexander, Bridget Ruth, and Kathy Bay, who's the executive producer. Ah. Stephen is in Burbank, listening to KTLK. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, you, Mike.
Hey.
You know, Thrifty was definitely on the right track, you know, when he's talking about working too much for not enough as compared to what it was in the past.
Right.
And if he examines it further, and if he puts more thinking into it and study, he will find out that the first rule of competition is to eliminate the competition.
Yeah, right.
And that the ultimate aim of capitalism is monopoly.
Right.
Therefore, negating capitalism itself as an economic system. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, how does that negate capitalism? But I see what you're saying. It brings in corporatism or fascism or whatever. But isn't that capitalism?
Let's toss coins. Let's ask the experts.
Yeah, that's a good idea, yeah.
The PhDs, you know, we listen to them, we talk to them, we say, gee whiz, you know. Like, I don't know, I used to think, well, hey, that guy's ripping my act. You know, I thought that up all by myself.
Yeah.
And then I'll read it in a book or somebody will say it on the radio, some PhD from Amherst or something, you know. Dude, you know, all you have to do is think about it. Look at your own reality. Look at what is out there and look at what you can have and what you can't have and the reasons why.
Right.
And the reasons why you can't have it is because they want us to be desperate. They want us to be worried. They want us to be able to do anything they want anytime they want us to do it. And if you dial into that fact and resist, Then you can develop your own little shell of defense, you know, like I became an atheist and that was a big load off my back, you know. Well, gee whiz, you know, I don't have to, you know, worry about offending people anymore. And the deal is just in regular social interaction, you know, how are you? You know, and I would say, well, I'm exactly the same as you, only different. Or how are you? And then continuing on that line. Dealing with the right-wingers,
right.
You know, it's gotten to the point where I just have to, you know, I used to fight against them. I used to try to dig
right.
into their minds, see where they're coming from.
Uh-huh.
Guess what? There's nothing there.
Yeah, that's true.
The only thing I can say to them is very thought-provoking indeed, you know, with a little snot behind that, you know, and that really helps in the personal life. You know, and when the others, I call them my disciples, or sometimes I go to them, and am I your disciple today, or am I your disciple?
Right.
I am in touch with people who are enlightened, and who are tuned in to the farce. And, you know, we're just trying to get each other together, you know, we're going to try and understand, you know, that the individual cannot exist without the strength of the collective.
Well, that and that's why I'm starting to feel either like a jerk or something. I don't know, because next Thursday, October 29th, I'm not going to come into work because I read at this website that this person at this little old website said, "Hey, it's time. Let's resist on October 29th. All you have to do is nothing. You don't have to do anything. Just do nothing, but do it creatively. Do your nothing creatively. In other words, the nothing really is nothing. It's not like saying, okay, I'm not going to do anything today. Oh, but, you know, I got to run the store and buy milk. You know, buy your milk on Wednesday. Don't do anything. Do nothing on Thursday. So that's what I'm going to do the 29th. This show will be a rebroadcast. We will, Kathy will set it up and run it. It runs on a Simeon program and runs by itself, but we are not going to work. You know how many people have signed up to do this?
8 or 9?
I think we're up to just under 20. It's not me. It's, you know, this guy's website. And, the last time I went there, I think there were 16, maybe 14. You know, maybe.
How about if I take a vacation day and fake it?
Well, whatever. Yeah, just whatever it takes. But, you know, it's your point, and I agree exactly. Individuals don't have any, they've got to understand that it's only the collective power. It's only the, it's not the power of one. That's an army commercial. It's the power of many that affect change. And I started thinking, well, when unemployment hits 6%, people will start to respond. Well, I started thinking when unemployment hits 7%, people would respond. When people hit 8%, unemployment hits 8%, people respond. When it hits, yeah, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, but they won't respond.
Absolutely. Until what?
unless it happens to them personally.
Right.
Then they have to start thinking about it.
So we have to wait until unemployment hits 50%. And the repossession number on houses gets up around, 40%. And then maybe will people react, or will at that point they be so beaten down and so spiritless and so lost that they'll just say, ah, screw it. Find me a place where I can lay down and die. You know what I'm saying?
It's either that or the other thing. We don't even want to think about that.
Well, this country will never have another revolution.
I know.
It just won't. It's so off the table. We've had the means to have legal revolutions over and over and over again, and never take them. I mean, the last time was during the Bush years when Pelosi had the power to begin a revolution by impeaching the son of a bitch. And she could have done it legally and without the force of arms. What did she do? Nothing.
Because we're just part of the herd. We're part of the sheeple, as my buddy Sanchez likes to say.
That's
well, what
right.
else is happening this is...
Make it quick. I got to go.
Okay. Peaceful
revolution. All right, man. Thank you.
Don't participate. Don't buy the crap. Don't buy
there you go.
The
there you go.
China.
October 29th. Thanks, Stephen. But to get to your call, I apologize. I see a whole bunch of people holding on. I'm sorry. I'll see you Monday. Have a good weekend, okay? Take care. Keep it lit. And have a great weekend wherever you are, Kevin Kinney. I'm going straight to hell. Won't you leave me alone again? I'm going straight to hell. Just like my mama said. I'm going straight to hell.
In this stressful